Mr. Fisher, can you identify any other contexts of state law besides marriage where you believe that classifying people based upon their sexual orientation would serve legitimate state interests?
I don't know of any other.
Here are people who actually want to have children. It is not accidental. They make that commitment to raise the children. I just don't get that.
Men and women create babies, and there has to be a social mechanism for dealing with them.
Do criminalize fornication?
I'm sorry, what?
Criminalize fornication?
No, no longer.
Do you like to?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Ecuador engages civil unions, three countries adopt rights for same-gender parents, and a U.S. appeals court scoffs at bad breeder behavior-based inequality. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wendell Jones.
And I'm Carol Myers.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending August 30th, 2014. Ecuador's President Rafael Correa announced this week that same-gender couples will be able to enter into civil unions in the tiny northwest South American country starting on September 15th. Lesbian and gay couples who do so will be entitled to the same rights as heterosexual couples in legally recognized marriages or civil unions. Ecuador's 2009 constitution bans civil marriage for gay and lesbian couples, but also provides for the legal recognition of committed, unmarried, heterosexual relationships. Correa's announcement expands that recognition to same-gender couples. The president was unequivocal, telling the South American television network Telesur that if someone is turned away by a government employee, that employee will be dismissed for denying constitutional rights. Correa also promised that all Ecuadorians in civil unions, regardless of the partner's sexual orientation or gender, would be able to have their civil union status reflected on their national identification cards. Only heterosexual married couples have been able to include that information until now. Among other niceties, the cards allow access to many government benefits, some of which are specific to partners in civil unions. This week's announcement stems from a summit between LGBT activists and the president on August 18th. While it's not marriage equality in the heavily Roman Catholic country, and same-gender couples can't adopt, both of which Correa has staunchly opposed, Ecuadorian trans and feminist activist Diane Rodriguez told Think Progress that opening civil unions to same-gender couples is like giving us full citizenship.
Attorneys for three same-gender couples at the heart of the challenge to the U.S. state of Utah's law denying such couples access to civil marriage have joined the state's Republican Attorney General, Sean Reyes, in asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review the case. The 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed in June with an earlier district court ruling that the ban violates the federal constitution. Reyes filed the state's appeal with the High Court on August 5th. Attorneys for Virginia and Oklahoma have also asked the high court justices to review cases overturning their bans on civil marriage for same-gender couples. The Supreme Court is not obligated to hear any appeals, but most observers predict that, if nothing else, the sheer volume of marriage equality rulings around the country will force justices to hear at least one of those cases, possibly as soon as next year.
In what may have been the most lopsided hearing so far in a federal appeals court considering state marriage bans, a three-judge panel of the Chicago-based 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this week all but annihilated arguments to maintain the bans by attorneys for the states of Indiana and Wisconsin. Led by Reagan appointee Richard Posner, all three judges challenged the logic of virtually every argument each attorney advanced to defend their law.
Is there some empirical basis for anything you have said?
The empirical basis that men and women create babies, and there has to be a social mechanism for dealing with them.
The best interests of children were a major focus in each almost hour-long hearing. Indiana and Wisconsin lawyers argued that keeping marriage exclusively heterosexual was necessary to encourage responsible procreation. Attorneys for the plaintiff couple stress the benefits to children headed by same-gender couples if civil marriage is open to their parents. We'll have highly entertaining and insightful highlights from the Indiana hearing in a few minutes on many of these same This Way Out stations.
Coupled same-gender parents and their children made news in three countries this week. Pink News reported that a gay couple in Switzerland has become the first to be legally recognized as the parents of a child. Even though surrogacy is illegal in Switzerland, the couple, living in a Swiss civil partnership, is now recognized as the legal parents of the child born to a surrogate mother. She and her husband legally abdicated their parental responsibilities. The Swiss Justice Department challenged the action of the local registry office in court. The ruling recognizing the two men as fathers partly acknowledged the concerns of the Justice Department by requiring the genetic parentage of the child to be included on his birth certificate. The Justice Department could still appeal the ruling.
A non-biological parent in Italy has become the first in that country to be allowed to legally adopt the child of her lesbian partner. Italy's La Repubblica newspaper reported that the now 5-year-old girl was born to one of the two women after she underwent fertility treatment abroad, and that the child was already living with the couple at their home in Rome. The juvenile court ruling was the first in Italy to allow second-parent adoption by a same-gender partner.
A non-biological lesbian parent in Colombia has also become the first in her country to be allowed to adopt her partner's offspring. According to an Associated Press report, Anna Liederman gave birth to two children via artificial insemination. Her longtime partner, Veronica Botero, however, had no parental rights over the children, now ages 4 and 6. The couple petitioned for second-parent adoption rights after the first child was born. While the constitutional court ruling applies to only couples where one member is a biological parent, legal experts say it could indicate the High Court's willingness to extend adoption rights to all same-gender couples in Colombia.
In other news, Berlin's long-serving Alt-Mayor Klaus Wowereit announced this week that he'll be stepping down in December after leading Germany's capital city for the past 13 years. The popular Social Democrat was credited with making his city a major international tourist destination, calling Berlin poor but sexy, and attracting young travelers in particular from around the world. However, huge cost overruns and charges of corruption and shoddy planning that have delayed the opening of Berlin's Willy Brandt Airport, scheduled for 2010 but still under construction, have seriously eroded Wowereit's support, and he decided to quit 2 years before another election was due. "I go voluntarily, and I am proud of my contribution to the positive development of the city," he said. After some 40 years in Berlin politics, he thanked city residents for giving him the chance to make a career out of my biggest hobby. Wowereit famously dismissed worries about his sexuality being a barrier to winning office prior to his election in 2001 by saying, "I am gay, and that's okay." He's been with his partner, Jorn Kubicki, a neurosurgeon, since 1993.
Elsewhere, 24-year-old Patricia Llerena Rodriguez, Miss Spain in both the 2008 and 2013 Miss Universe pageants, came out as a lesbian last week through an Instagram post, making her what's believed to be the first openly lesbian international beauty queen. The picture, captioned Romeo and Juliet, shows Rodriguez in an intimate moment with girlfriend Vanessa Klein, a Spanish DJ and singer. Rodriguez tweeted her thanks for all the support she's received. But as She Wired noted, Rodriguez may well be the last Miss Spain winner for a while, since the company running the Miss Universe competition filed for bankruptcy in 2013.
And finally, the coming out of a second beauty queen in as many weeks has truly international implications. The Rose of Tralee is a competition in which Irish communities around the world send a beauty queen to the finals in Ireland's County Kerry. This year's winner, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania resident Maria Walsh, came out as lesbian this week in an interview with the Irish Sun newspaper. The 27-year-old discussed the support she's received from her family, saying that, "I told my parents and they were supportive, as I knew they would be. I'm not ashamed of my sexuality by any means," she said. "The Rose of Tralee is about celebrating women's intelligence, careers, and their volunteer work," she added. "The question of sexuality never came up. To me, being gay is normal. It's natural." Rose of Tralee Executive International Chairman Anthony O'Gara said the festival was delighted to have chosen Ms. Walsh as this year's Rose, noting that she is a wonderful person, an attractive, intelligent woman, and a very worthy winner who happens to be gay.
But as blogger Joe My God noted, the revelation by the reigning Rose might be a bit of a problem for the Ancient Order of Hibernians, organizers of New York City's annual St. Patrick's Day parade. The Roman Catholic Church-affiliated group continues to ban any LGBT-identified contingent from marching in the world's largest and oldest such celebration. Traditionally, like every prior winner of the Rose of Tralee Festival, dubbed a global celebration of Irish culture, Walsh is supposed to be feted and fawned over during next year's St. Patrick's Day season in New York. It could be interesting to see how the parade sponsors greet the now-out lesbian beauty queen.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 30th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm Wendell Jones.
Children were at the heart of the arguments about marriage equality in hearings on August 26th at the Chicago-based 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Attorneys for Indiana and Wisconsin each defended his state's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples as necessary to the promotion of responsible procreation. Attorneys for the plaintiff couples stressed the inequities faced by the children of same-gender couples because their parents are denied civil marriage. But everyone's been talking about how the three-judge panel, led by Ronald Reagan appointee Richard Posner, pulverized every argument to maintain their civil marriage bans that the state attorneys offered. We've got highlights in a few moments from the Indiana hearing. But we want to start first with some brief comments about those hearings by BuzzFeed's Chris Geidner on MSNBC's Up with Steve Kornacki. The voices you'll hear then belong to Judge Posner, Bill Clinton appointee Judge Ann Claire Williams, and Obama appointee Judge David Hamilton. The victim of their legal rending was Indiana Solicitor General Thomas Fisher. Geidner described what he witnessed this week as something else.
I've been attending all of these arguments across the country, and it was an environment unlike any that we've seen in any of these other cases. I mean, Judge Posner was just crushing each of the lawyers from the two states in their attempt to defend the bans. And then even when he wasn't doing it, the other two judges, Judge Williams, and then there was also Judge Hamilton who was hearing the case, both of them were sort of the nicer version of the same sort of arguments mm-hmm. that Judge Posner was giving. And when we got into it and within the first 5 minutes of the argument, it became sort of clear where the judges were going to be going, that it sort of the tone lightened mm-hmm. and people started sort of chuckling along as these questions got more and more brutal.
I think the issue here is to deal with what may be a fleeting moment of passion that leads to a child that nobody contemplated. And how do we deal with that? And the idea with marriage is to channel that behavior into a specific institution.
Criminalize fornication.
I'm sorry, what?
Criminalize fornication?
No, no longer.
Would you like to?
I don't know. I mean, it's not an issue here. The legislature hasn't done that for some time.
It sounds like a way of dealing with this unintended child problem.
It's one thing to criminalize.
You don't seem to like adoption as a way of dealing with it.
That is not true. It's not that we don't like it, that we are grateful for adoption.
So why do you prefer heterosexual adoption to homosexual adoption?
We don't.
Of course you do. You give all sorts of benefits to the heterosexual adoptive parents and no benefits to the homosexual adoptive parents.
Well, no, this
you
is
must
not...
You must have a reason for that.
Well, the benefits that you're talking about are not triggered based on sexuality. They're based, of course, on marital status, which
yes,
is...
Come on now. You're going in circles. The question is, why do you want the children who are adopted by same-sex couples, of whom there appear to be a couple hundred thousand, why do you want them to be worse off? Because they don't have these financial and psychological benefits of having married parents. You allow the homosexual couples to adopt. Why don't you want their children to have the same advantages as children adopted by heterosexual couples?
The question is, what can we do to nudge heterosexual couples who may produce children unintentionally to plan for this, to plan for the consequences and appreciate the consequences of sexual behavior? Those consequences don't arise with same-sex couples. It's not in the context of adoption that marriage
is... But you're not answering my question. You've got millions of adopted children, and a lot of them, the 200,000 or more, are adopted by same-sex couples. Why don't you want their children to be as well off as the adopted children of heterosexual couples.
The marriage scheme is set up not with adoption in mind. It's set up with what dealing with the consequences.
That's a kind of weakness, isn't it?
Well, no. In fact, we're looking here at an institution that goes back to when, you know, there was a fundamental problem dealing with unintended babies.
Why does Indiana let sterile people marry?
I think the law goes as far as it reasonably can in defining marriage according to this theory of responsible procreation.
We don't allow incest, right?
We allow incest? We don't allow incest.
First cousin.
Over 65. Yeah, I think there again, the assumption being that there would be infertility at that stage.
Mr. Fisher, can you identify any other contexts of state law besides marriage where you believe that classifying people based upon their sexual orientation would serve legitimate state interests?
Well, first, I have to push back against the premise. You said other. I don't think this is that sort of circumstance. But if the question is, are there...
Well, then we get into the game, is it sex discrimination or sexual orientation discrimination? Surely the purpose here is clear. But let's get past that point,
right,
and please address the question.
No, I don't know of any other.
Wouldn't you agree that marriage is not just about having children, but about raising children? You agree there are two components?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Then are you saying same-sex couples cannot successfully raise children?
Absolutely not.
Well, if Indiana's law is about successfully raising children and you agree same-sex couples can successfully raise children, why shouldn't the ban be lifted?
I think the assumption is that with opposite-sex couples, there is very little thought given during the sexual act sometimes to whether babies may be a consequence.
So because gay and homosexual couples actually choose to be parents, choose to take on that obligation, that difference of choice is, you're setting that up differently than accidental. So, I mean, here are people who actually want to have children, know they want to have children. It is not accidental. They make that commitment to raise the children. I just don't get that.
Well,
it's
I think
another aspect of what Judge Posner is raising.
And I think the working assumption there, Your Honor, is that in that circumstance, the state doesn't need to nudge those couples to stay together. There already is that working understanding. With opposite-sex couples, it may be a fleeting moment of passion that leads to a child. And that's what we're trying to address.
Isn't there a strong interest in kids to be adopted?
Of course.
If you allow same-sex marriage, you're going to have more adopters, right?
I don't know that that's
true. Well, it's much cheaper to adopt a child if you're married because you get all these benefits from the state and the federal government. You should be wanting to enlist people in as adopters so you can minimize. What is pathetic? You got 10,000 foster care children in Indiana. Don't you want to get them adopted?
You're talking about prioritizing competing issues.
No,
and that's the legislature's job.
I don't see the competing issue.
The legislature has an understanding of marriage that it has decided to preserve, and it's based on...
But it's arbitrary. It doesn't serve any public... I mean, you allow all these sterile people to get married. Why are you doing that? If you're so concerned with procreation, why are you letting them get married?
We couldn't constitutionally inquire. I think all this is a reflection of biology. It's simply that men and women make babies and same-sex couples do not.
But I think you made a very telling statement when you Judge Posner asked you about brothers and sisters marrying and you said a transgression against social norm. I mean, isn't that really your fundamental problem or concern?
No, I think our...
That the gay marriages really boil down to that.
No, I think that we're purely...
Particularly when you look at the history, as Judge Hamilton has pointed out, of the persecution of gay people in our society.
No, I think what we're talking about here is purely utilitarian. It's purely a matter of men and women make babies and same-sex couples do not. And we have to have a mechanism for dealing with those babies, and marriage is that mechanism.
The problem is that the adoptive parents who are a homosexual couple and the adoptive parents who are heterosexual... What is the difference from the standpoint of the child welfare? Apparently not, because you don't put any barriers. You allow joint adoption by a homosexual couple, so you must think they make reasonable parents. So why don't you want to give them the same benefits as other parents of adopted children?
Because the policy is formulated with an eye towards what's happening.
I want a reason. What's the reason? Do you really think you get less extramarital sex or something by this rule? Do you believe that? evidence, right?
The policy is not
evidence. You're not dealing facts.
Policy is not formulated with an eye towards jumping in the middle of, an understood and well-established relationship. It's formulated with the idea of we don't know what's going to happen with any particular couple, and with the idea that we know that opposite-sex couples...
Well, that's loving, right? Nobody knew how interracial marriage was going to work.
No, I'm talking about the production of babies here. I'm talking about we don't know which couples are going to reproduce and which not. All we know is that opposite-sex couples can reproduce even if they don't intend to on the heat of the moment.
But you let all these sterile people marry.
But we don't know who they are. And we can't...
You know who the cousins, right?
We can't inquire...
It's ridiculous, if you don't mind my saying so. You have some 80-year-old cousins who've gotten married, and you say that's a model for family formation, will encourage young people to marry?
Well, I think that's part of it. And the other part...
That front, is there evidence about that model?
No, it's self-evident is the only
thing. I regard it as absurd. You say it's self-evident,
well,
right? Is there some empirical basis for anything you have said?
The empirical basis that men and women create babies, and there has to be a social mechanism for dealing with them.
That was Indiana Solicitor General Thomas Fisher in a losing legal battle with Judges Richard Posner and Claire Williams and David Hamilton of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. While it's a little hard to believe, many observers said that Wisconsin Assistant Attorney General Timothy C. Samuelson fared even worse during his state's hearing. Camilla Taylor, Lambda Legal's Marriage Project Director, and Kenneth Falk, Legal Director of the ACLU of Indiana, represented the Hoosier State plaintiff couples. Taylor referenced the Windsor case during her arguments, last year's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down key provisions of the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA. She also profiled one of the plaintiff couples, Glenn Funkhauser and Henry Green, who've been in a loving, committed relationship for 22 years and are raising a now 12-year-old son. Specifically citing Lawrence v. Texas, the landmark Supreme Court ruling that overturned state sodomy laws, Falk also addressed slippery slope assertions during his arguments that opening civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples will lead to the legalization of everything from bestiality to polygamy.
The reasons for protecting our liberty to choose whom we marry, I think, are outlined in the Turner case pretty comprehensively. They have to do with what marriage means as a timeless and universal matter for all of us. And that has to do with dedication and public support and commitment, but it also has to do with the way government provides benefits and protections. And specifically for Glenn and Henry, for example, who were licensed as foster parents, the state placed a child in their home. They came here because they want their child to be able to grow up understanding that his family is worth just as much as any other family. So by denying that couple the right to marry, the state has done exactly what was identified in Windsor as the harm of DOMA in denying marital respect to same-sex couples. It has not only demeaned the couple itself by refusing to allow them to make that choice for themselves, but it has also humiliated the children in these families, and it has deprived them of the ability to understand the integrity and the closeness of their own families, to quote Windsor.
Justice Scalia in Lawrence noted, in dissent, that procreation is not a qualification for marriage. And even if there was some tenuous relationship, there is no explanation, nor is there possibly one apparent, as to how allowing same-sex couples to marry would in any way affect whatever interest the state has, particularly because the state allows hordes of opposite-sex people who are not procreating to marry. Ultimately, in their reply brief, the state seems to try and expand this notion of responsible procreation beyond the minute of procreation to raising children. But there, of course, as the court has noted out, we reach an even more obvious equal protection problem, because as far as the child is concerned, that child has the exact same needs and can have the exact same benefit and security from their parents being married, regardless of whether their parents are same-sex or opposite-sex. And, of course, at its most basic...
Or whether the child was intended or not.
Of course. Most children don't grow up thinking, I was intended, I wasn't intended. And most parents tend not to think that way about their children, at least eventually.
The arguments against polygamy sound an awful lot like the arguments against gay marriage.
Well, nothing has to change about marriage, Your Honor, as we've seen in 19 states in the District of Columbia, except elimination of the gendered entry barrier.
The strongest argument against recognizing polygamy, then, is simply the challenge of rewriting the laws to deal with, for example, inheritance rules for multiple spouses instead of for just one?
Your Honor, that case would have to rise or fall on its own merits.
There is no slippery slope. The lesson of Lawrence and the lesson of the marriage cases is that we cannot look behind and say we don't want those people to exercise a right of sexual intimacy or we don't want those people to marry. Going back to my mathematical diagram of marriage, if you have two people in it, regardless of their sexes, the formula is going to look exactly the same. It's going to look like marriage.
Why shouldn't we let the Supreme Court make that decision?
I don't think any of us have any illusion about the fact that the U.S. Supreme Court is eventually going to decide and hear and decide a marriage case. But in the meantime, as every single court that has faced the question has held, I think it's incumbent upon the lower courts to recognize that the arc of legal history, if not actual history, has long passed Baker by. This statute is unconstitutional. The district court was correct, and the district court should be affirmed.
Attorneys for the Indiana Marriage Equality Plaintiffs, Kenneth Falk and Camilla Taylor. And finally, a brief but insightful comment from Freedom to Marry founder Evan Wolfson on that same MSNBC program this week about the Seventh Circuit's Judge Posner.
Judge Posner in 1997 wrote an article in which he was reviewing a book advocating for the freedom to marry. And what he really said was, whether or not there's a constitutional right, and probably there is, it's unrealistic to expect the courts to get too far ahead of the public. The country's not ready, he said in 1997. And here he was leading the charge now in court the other day, saying it's time for this discrimination to end. There is no good reason for it.
It's not the pot that grows the flower. It's not the clock that slows the hour. The definition's plain for anyone to see. Love is all it takes to make a family. The definition's plain for anyone to see. Love is all it takes to make a family.
Ooh. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones and Carol Myers contributed program material with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Romanofsky and Phillips crooned Love Is All It Takes, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out also thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KRCL Salt Lake City, Utah, 6RTR Perth, Australia, WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!